Welcome to The More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. I'm Kevin Kelton, and as usual, I'm joined by our friends Greg Matusak.
Hey, Kevin. Yes.
And Ward Anderson is here. Hello, Ward.
The Chicago Six of the More Perfect Union podcast. I have been persecuted by Facebook, and it shall happen no longer.
Oh, that's right. You got kicked off again.
Yes.
Also here is Joe Sear.
This is cancel culture, eh?
I was asked to tone down the testosterone talk this week, so I've said it before and I'll say it again. I got 45 quality seconds for you this week.
And speaking of testosterone levels, coming back, our returning champ, Jennifer Peterson.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for inviting me back. Great to be here.
We had a lovely episode with you a few weeks back, been trying to get you back on since then, and so glad you could join us for this one. So we're going to jump right into it because there's so much to talk about. Now, we've been doing, this is the 342nd episode of The More Perfect Union, and we do not have an official count, but Greg, I would hate to know how many of those began with, there was another shooting this weekend just before we did the episode.
Oh, too many.
Yeah, and here we find ourselves again this weekend, amazingly and unfortunately, more than just one or two. There was the shooting, of course, in Buffalo that we'll talk about, one just today in Laguna Woods, California, and at least three overnight in Milwaukee, and those are just the ones I've heard about. So, gang, is there anything that we could add to this topic that hasn't been said already?
When Sandy Hook happened and nothing changed, so now we have adults and hate crimes and things like that. It's just another Thursday, you know, for them.
Greg, you said nothing ever changes, and it's true, the violence keeps happening, but you know what I think has started to change this weekend, not necessarily for the better? Instead of talking about guns, now it's all about hate crime. It's about racism. It's about white supremacists or white nationalists. I'm not sure what happened in Laguna Woods, but apparently this was a Taiwanese congregation. So it looks like the conversation is shifting from guns to hate and prejudice. I don't know that that's necessarily an improvement because we'll never be able to wipe out hate and prejudice. What we can regulate is guns.
It's funny because I told someone who's pretty far right, you know, there's this thing in Buffalo that happened, and I said it was a hate crime. And they were like, oh, I don't know if I believe that was a hate crime. Oy. And I was like, it was definitely a hate crime. I mean, he live streamed it. He sent out a manifesto. He said he was targeting, you know, a group of minorities and people of color. And he goes, I don't know if you would. He hated everybody, it seemed. I was like, not white people.
He told the white person to duck, and he apologized to the white person. He didn't shoot.
I mean,
the guy's, you know, mentally ill, but then that's a question of why are mentally ill people allowed to get guns? We're all very, very vulnerable because of this.
Okay. Well, using that as a segue, talking about crazy people, the Supreme Court was in the news this week. Or was it 2 weeks
ago? Bravo. Good segue. Well done, you.
I could have used hate also, but I decided to go with crazy. So we did not do a podcast last week when the news first broke about the draft of the 5-3, maybe 5-4 or 6-3 decision written by Samuel Alito that looks like it's going to overturn Roe versus Wade. So Jennifer, I think we all are really happy to have a woman here for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give you first crack at this story. Any angle that you want to bring up, I'd love to hear it.
Oh boy. I mean, this is such a hard one because I literally have been terrified of this. I've been terrified of this for a long time. And we've been warned that this is what was going on. I just, you know, we also have to go on with our lives and we don't want to have to think 24/7 that this could happen. And then this gets leaked. To me, it's sickening. I'm having a hard time sleeping. I'll be honest with you guys. This is major for me. And this is a part of like work I've done. I've done a lot of work with Planned Parenthood. I know all of the health services they provide for women. This is once if they really do this, I think this is going to create, I mean, you guys, I think it's going to create chaos. And is going to be, I mean, the protests in front of their homes and they're saying that's illegal. I'm like, you know what? What they're doing is despicable. So protest in front of their homes. Do whatever it takes.
You know, the concept of body autonomy is literally being ripped away from half of America, a little bit more than half of America. And at the same way, no one forces people to give blood that could save people's lives. No one forces us to be organ donors. If someone needed a kidney and I had the only match, no one would force me to give that kidney. In fact, it's against the law to, you know, say, hey, even if I was dead, okay, they couldn't do that because that's, wait, my body. That's the whole body autonomy. But now they're saying, well, we're really sorry, but we are going to make you. That blows my mind. And they're saying, well, this is sort of what the forefathers saw. How are they thinking that? You know, the forefathers didn't even give women the right to vote. And they're thinking that this is, well, of course, the forefathers. The forefathers, half the forefathers owned people. Why
that they were by the way, raping and then acknowledging their own children. So take it to that's what they were doing. So that's what they want back, in my opinion. It's so hard for me to make sense of it because this has been the way, the law of the land for over 50 years, right? So I mean, all of a sudden they're going to just rip our rights away. And I'm just like, oh, okay, no. I mean, they can try and they might get away. I don't know. I mean, it terrifies me too, because I think they get away with, they do this. What's next? I mean, come on, gay rights, gay marriage, that's gone. I mean,
initially, I think you're right. We should ask ourselves, what's next? What's immediately next? I mean, abortions will not stop. People who need abortions will not stop. There will be haves and have-nots.
Yeah.
Rich people will get abortions. The poor, immigrants, people who do not have the finances or resources to either move to a state that has these who have access, or, you know, if you're wealthy, you can fly to another country and it will be like that.
Just occurred to me that you've had the right to this your entire lives. All of you entire life, there's been a legalized, I like to call it women's reproductive rights. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one that can remember. Member of a pre-Roe era. But Ward, you had something to add.
A couple of things. One, abortion isn't modern. Okay. Alito tries to argue about what was and wasn't common at the time of the writing of the Constitution and et cetera, et cetera. But it wasn't illegal. And it was a common enough practice that Benjamin Franklin had a recipe for it on how to induce an abortion with certain ingredients. As much as we sometimes talk about the primitiveness of the founders, right, compared to us, in this case, they were way ahead of us when it came to thinking about how we see this subject. They didn't mention abortion in the Constitution because it wasn't a subject they gave a shit about.
Yeah. Right. You know, as I did some research on it this weekend, apparently Alito's, and I didn't read the whole 68-page thing, but I read enough to get a sense of where he was coming from. And in trying to make this argument that abortion is not, or woman's right to choose is not a constitutional right, they go back to when the 14th Amendment was adopted. Right. And again, I think it's around 1868, I believe, or something like that. And he says that at that time, abortion was not legal in most of the states. There were 38 states at the time. But I read an article by a professor who's spent his life work documenting this. And apparently Alito's even wrong on that. Of the 38 states, and again, I'm paraphrasing this article, there was a term that was used. The term was quickening, which came from British law. And it's a term that meant when the woman could feel the fetus moving in the womb, and that occurred somewhere between 4 and 6 months. And until that point, abortion was legal in about 28 or 29 of the original 38 states. And that's right up until the 14th Amendment was passed. So Alito was wrong on that.
The thing that I always go back to with the Supreme Court that we're stuck with right now, insane punishment, is that 5 of the 9 Supreme Court justices were nominated by presidents who did not win the popular vote.
I'll speak to that. The Supreme Court was never a representation of the people, because it's not an election at all. And you're right. It's not the presidents who have appointed 5 of them haven't won the popular vote, but we don't choose presidents by popular votes. We choose it with the Electoral College. And you know what? That's one of those things where, just like Donald Trump has to get over that he lost the election, Democrats have to get over the whole popular vote versus electoral vote thing. That, we have to move.
That's a very
good point. We have to move past this one. And until we change that, you know, and you're right, I'm 100% with you on that point, but we can't keep bringing that up because it's one of those things like, but it's not. And right. It always bites us in the bottom because it's sort of like, yeah,
But I think it helps people understand how we got into the situation.
Well, you're right. It's a great reference. It totally. But the other thing, and this, I think, is the last point, the Supreme Court, for all those reasons, the first one, especially, it's not a representation, sometimes has to do things that's not popular because they're interpreting laws, and laws aren't always cool. Laws aren't always fun because they're supposed to maintain order, and sometimes laws are written poorly and they are supposed to say, this is how it reads, this is how it says, so this is how it goes. You want to change it? Go over to that big house over there with the pointy dome.
I want to speak to that.
Yeah.
I think you made some very good points, Greg. Everybody has.
I'm just riffing off Miss Peterson.
I mean, it's fine. It's just that, okay, if that's the way the Supreme Court is set up to not represent the people, then I think there's a problem.
You're absolutely 100%.
When I look at it, I go, where did we get to this place? And then how?
Well, Brown versus Board of Education probably wasn't a popular decision when it was first announced.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that a lot of decisions that gave rights to minorities probably were not popular when they were first announced.
Well, Roe versus Wade wasn't as popular when it was first ruled.
Okay, so a couple of thoughts. First of all, he seems to hinge his argument on his belief that there's no right to abort a fetus. But he keeps talking about the Constitution doesn't mention it. The Constitution doesn't confer rights to unborn beings. So right there, the whole argument, because what they will say is what we are doing, the reason that we are overturning this particular precedent is because we are balancing the rights of a mother to the rights of this unborn child, their lingo, their wording, not mine. And what I would love to be able to say to him is, please show me in the Constitution where an unborn being has rights. It's not in there either. Now, I want to ask you guys this. I want to put you on the spot. Listen, we've all been thinking about this and we all have our own emotional reactions. And although I am very disappointed, not surprised by this, I knew this was coming. I was never fooled. Unlike Susan Collins, I was never fooled by what was coming down the pike. But I think Democrats have to start taking some responsibility for where we as a party find us now. Those of us who are pro-choice, we have to take some responsibility because in 1993 and 1994, Democrats controlled the Senate, the House, and the White House. Then again, in 2009 and 2010, under Obama, Democrats controlled the Senate, the Congress, and the White House. And we had 59 votes in the Senate. So even after, you know, now someone will argue, well, Obama had to immediately deal with the financial crisis. Yes, I'll stipulate that. But once they passed the Recovery Act, once they passed the ACA, he still, for another 6-7 months, he had 59 Democratic senators, a Democratic House, and there were at least three that I can name, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and Olympia Snowe, Republicans that are pro-choice. So why didn't Democrats try to get Roe codified then instead of waiting till now when it's going to be absolutely 100% impossible to codify it in the next God knows how many years?
It's one of those things that no one wants to talk about. Okay, remember in 1992-93, Operation Rescue was going on. You had people chaining themselves to and lying down in front of cars, in front of Planned Parenthood. Okay, this was something
that was exactly when it should have been codified.
Right. The point being is it seemed safe. It seemed like it wasn't something.
But it was never safe. And I had this argument with people because I made this comment on Facebook just to test it. And people started coming in and saying, well, you know, Roe was under fire then. It's always been under fire. There's always been four solid votes to overturn Roe. And anytime, listen, people like there are people who truly believe, well, it's only because Ruth Bader Ginsburg died that we find ourselves in this situation. And believe me, I am very upset at Democrats. We've talked about this, you know, to death. I'm very upset at Democrats who, for whatever reason, withheld their vote from Hillary Clinton or badmouthed her and then still voted for her, but through social media poisoned her campaign, because they certainly deserve a lot of responsibility for where we are. But even before, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was ill and in bad health for a very long time before she passed. And she could have passed any time during the Trump administration. The same is true with Justice Breyer, who, you know, he could have had, I mean, God forbid, but he could have had a heart attack at any point. So this idea that there was a safe row because the Republicans didn't have the votes to overturn it, that could have, listen, what if Mitt Romney had won the presidency in 2012? Okay. So there's a lot of points in history where this could have gone to where it is now. Well, and Democrats, they dropped the freaking ball. They kicked the can down the road, and we have to take responsibility. We are where we are because, unlike Republicans, we sat back and we focused more on taxes and on the ACA and on other things that, yes, they are important, but look at where we are now.
Here's the thing. I am relatively young compared to Kevin and how Greg looks. And the thing about that is the abortion topic has been something that's been a part of my life forever. And yet it seemed like something that was going on forever before I even was born. I was born in 1973. And yet, despite the fact that abortion has been legal and Roe versus Wade is a thing, it seems like something that's been at risk my entire fucking life, right? So when people talk about like, well, we never really felt this before, I go, I don't know why you didn't.
That's my point.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I'm not surprised. I think one of the things is that we haven't been, I guess younger women today don't realize how hard others fought for this for us, men and women, and how long it took to get these protections and to get abortion legal. And yeah, I've thought a lot about this. And I think a lot of it has to do with just, I mean, there was, I think several years ago, I was just out with friends and I said, you know, my fear is that we're going to have like Roe v. Wade will be overturned because everyone just takes it for granted. And a lot of like the very young people just take it for granted, not people like, you know, 30 plus or whatever, but like really young who just don't even know the history of it and how so many people fought for our rights. Just like people don't understand how hard it was for women to get the vote. Or there was a time we couldn't even use credit cards. I mean, we had to check in with our husband for everything. And it seems like there's a very strong movement in this country that wants it to go back to that. And by the way, no one talks about how dangerous childbirth is. And when they're going to force all of these young girls and young women and older women, doesn't matter the age, I guess, to have these babies that they don't want to carry, they can't afford. How many women are going to die in childbirth because of this? Because it's not like having a child is safe. Many women die in childbirth in this country. And this is never a dialogue with these people.
It happens more than any other first world country.
Absolutely. And that's left out of the discussion 100%. And I don't understand it. I do not. Well, I guess I understand they don't want to talk about it. But I mean, they also don't talk about how many children we have in foster care. We have hundreds of thousands of kids in foster care. We're not taking care of them. We're not.
Right. You know, they enact these laws in these states and then they don't say, well, but we are going to start giving out prenatal vitamins. We're going to start giving out free OBGYN visits. And here's vouchers. And here's, oh, you can't make it. Good. We're going to take care of this for you because, you know, you don't have a choice. And you know, if you're not going to take care of that baby inside of you correctly, then the state will step up. They don't care.
They're the same people that shame people who have to take food stamps. So the same people who have to depend on assistance. They shame them and then they want them to force them to have more children. And it's insanity to me.
Right.
And yeah, that's how I feel.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Why don't we move on? Because we have some fun topics to discuss to get off of
this.
These are super heavy topics. Kendrick Lamar dropped a new album. I do not listen to this kind of music. Again,
I don't believe you.
Yeah. It does not work for me. I understand, Jennifer, you're on the sidelines of rap music with me.
Right. I would love to chime in on this, but I'm more interested to hear what you guys think, because I was just listening to Michael Bublé earlier. So,
all right. Let me say this as someone with a music degree and like 20 years of music experience, people who say they don't like hip hop don't actually listen to hip hop. And yes, there is bad hip hop and there's bad rap, but just like every type of music, there's great hip hop. And people who don't listen to country don't listen to country. And there's terrible, we call it stadium country. It's probably the worst type of country music. But there's great country music. Everything from like Dolly Parton. Oh, who doesn't like Dolly Parton?
Nobody. Everyone loves Dolly Parton.
Everyone loves her. And there's very few types of music that doesn't have at least some good music in it. Duke Ellington said, like when someone asked Duke Ellington once, what's your favorite type of music? He said, there's two types of music. He says, there's good music and there's bad music. And except for like Nordic death metal, that's one thing I really have a hard time listening to. I know.
God,
really,
I love that music.
I know. It is addictive.
I'm going to send you a Nordic death metal mixtape.
I will. I have some if anyone wants to listen to it. But there is good quality stuff in almost every genre, and there's nothing better than finding something new. And if anyone is like, oh, I would like to dip my toe in, where should I start?
You want Chunky A, and then you're gonna go with Ninja Rap by Vanilla Ice.
That's a good one. I would actually start with Kanye West's Graduation.
That's a good one.
That's a great one to start. But in all honesty, this new Kendrick Lamar album is brilliant. It deals with a lot of issues, a lot of social issues. It's a journey of self-discovery where he's going, and it is explicit. It's not for the kids. It's not for driving to Sunday school.
I'm going to come at it from a different point of view, because Greg's coming at it from all musically, and I'm going to come at it from a space of depression. Like, I've gone through some, you know, depressive episodes in like the last couple months, and to have an album kind of reach out to me like this has, and some of the themes really hit home. There's a song where the hook is like, we grieve different, and that kind of hit me, because since losing my dad, it's been a process trying to find a new normal. And to hear a hip hop artist come out and talk about having depression issues, you should talk to a therapist, you think it's crazy. Just the way he makes all these things art makes me feel better and less like an outcast.
That's really interesting, Joe. I want to jump in there because of what you said. I always defer to Greg when it comes to musicianship, right? He knows that better than any of us. Okay, especially music theory, music composition, I'm going to go to him. But that's interesting you say that to me, because your connection with music is how I've always connected to it, right? I've never connected to it on any kind of composition level or theory level or anything like that, right? But what I like about what you're saying is that I think what we all need to remember is what sort of a groundbreaking or seminal, I guess you say, a seminal moment in everyone's life experience is when the music they enjoy speaks to them. They finally feel that, right? Like, everyone loved the Beatles, right? When they just came out singing pop love songs. The Beatles were like the original boy band, right? Isn't that what they say? But when did you really see, like, everybody, critics and everyone fell in love with the Beatles? It's when the music began to speak to them, when they began to identify with it. And so what you're seeing now is, especially with pop and hip hop, and especially hip hop becoming the mainstream music, is that artists are breaking out of the confines of how it's been, how that was established. But my point is that now that people are identifying with a type of music that is breaking out of its own confines, and it's getting very personal and very deep, and it's getting very serious and all, we're seeing that same thing we've seen with the rock generation and the pop generation. And it's just fascinating to me how it's all cyclical within this world of pop culture and music, right? Because my walls are lined with album covers of music that inspired or meant something to me, right?
And Kendrick while I am relating to it, there are, like Greg said, very musical elements on this that are amazing. Now, I would say since To Pimp a Butterfly, he's incorporated a lot of jazz tempo changes and things like that that are very interesting.
The last thing I think that we should talk about with this album is there is one track called the Anti-Diary, where it is a track about the LGBTQT community, and especially the trans community. And I think it's not groundbreaking. There have been other songs, but it's being pretty well received. And to have the hip hop community discuss, he discusses his relationship with family members who are trans. It's amazing, you know. And when we use this term art when talking about music, I think that's fair. But once again, if you don't listen to hip hop, you should listen to good hip hop. There is lots of bad hip hop out there. Listen to some good stuff. Anyone DM me and I'll send you a whole list. I'll also send you a good list of jazz, modern jazz too.
I do want to bring up one thing though. Since Jennifer's last been on, I have finally seen the original West Side Story. And I was telling Kevin, it's some of the best pro wrestling I've ever seen. Because at first I was very critical of it. I'm like, what's going on? The scenes where the gangs are approaching is menacing. And then the second they go to start dancing, I'm like, what is this? But then when they fight, I had a groundbreaking moment. I'm like, oh my God, pro wrestling is just musical theater without the songs.
I'm just in shock and so happy that Joe watched the original West Side, but you didn't watch the remake. So you,
and he appre- no, but I wasn't going to bother. And he didn't just watch it. He appreciated
after that.
You weren't going to watch the remake after watching the original because you liked the original so much.
Yeah, it was so perfect. Like, I don't need to see that redone in a new way. We've done so many remakes over the years and so many reimaginings. I liked it because it looked like to me like Rear Window looked. Like, yes. You're filming a film on a set. You've got an idea. Like, just the title sequence, it almost hit me like a James Bond sequence where got the colors, you got the sounds. Everything about it was amazing.
Oh, my gosh, Joe. So happy.
I just want to point out that Joe is a huge wrestling fan, and he just told us about how he didn't want to watch the same storyline twice.
I was told to tune down the masculinity talk this week. So I'm coming at you with depression. I'm coming at you.
That hasn't gone too well. The masculinity is in full gear on the show.
That was like saying I'm a big fan of Chicago. You know what I mean? But what I really like about this TV show is that there's no horn section.
So let's talk about TV and films. And what we're all watching this week, I'll throw it open to whoever wants to start. What have you guys been watching that you'd like to share with us?
Craig is waving his arm.
Oh my gosh. I've been wanting to talk about this show for probably 6 weeks, probably longer. There's a show on HBO and it's been around. It's been on for a little while. So if you haven't seen it yet, please. It's called Our Flag Means Death. It's a Takiti. Help me with his name.
Takiti Waititi.
Thank you. He wrote it. He directed it. I asked my wife how she would describe it. And she said, it's a funny pirate show. And I said, that's it? And she goes, yeah. But it's the LGBTQT. Seems like I watch a lot of LGBTQT shows. Have embraced it. I was asking some people why they enjoy it so much. Because there's several gay relationships in it that are just normal, and everyone just sort of like, it normalizes a lot of things that you would think like this is scandalous, or even today people would be like, wait, what? It's just normal, and it's just relaxed, and it's just fine. And you see a budding relationship and it's just fine. And it's sort of like what's the show with Schitt's Creek.
I love that show. Mm-hmm. That was my favorite.
And everyone just sort of accepted, David's dating. And that was fine. And no one was like, I have an issue with this. It was just accepted and how it should be. You know, and I'm watching Severance right now, but I'll talk about that when I finish it.
Oh, yeah. I've seen a couple of episodes of Severance. I find it fascinating. It's a very surreal show, maybe the most surreal thing I've seen. And I can't quite get a handle on it, and yet I can't stop watching it. Anybody else watch Severance?
Yeah, I'm the same way with it.
Yeah, I started watching it. Patricia Arquette's in that one, right?
Adam Scott, Greg, they're doing.
Guess who gave Adam Scott his first job in television?
Are you kidding me?
What was it?
Boy Meets World. He played a character called Griff. I didn't give him the part. I wrote the first episode that Griff appeared in, and Adam Scott was cast in it.
He overcame way more than we realized.
Yes. He was on a Boy Meets World, and he still had a career.
So you're saying you gave Adam Scott life in entertainment?
Yes, yes. I discovered him. He was sitting at Schlotsky's Deli at the counter, or Schwab's, I don't know.
So you and I are the only two people old enough and in the know enough to get that.
Oh my God, I just pulled a picture of him. He looks exactly the same. He never ages.
Jennifer, you were going to say something?
That was just such a perfect of a certain age fucking reference. Oh, my God.
Oh, everybody knows the Schwab's counter story.
I'll ask you off
it. Yeah. Just see, like right there, Joe doesn't know. He doesn't know.
I've got no clue.
See?
Who was discovered? Jennifer, do you know who was discovered at Schwab's? Was it Lana Turner?
Lana Turner. That's the story. Yeah. I don't know if it's urban.
Yeah, it may be more legend.
Really happened.
Than, yeah.
You know, I'm not quite sure, but it makes a great story. And I wish there were Schwab's around now where I could just go and have like a fountain drink and get discovered or meet my husband or something like that. They don't have those anymore. Like, you can't get that in a drive-through.
Has anybody seen, I'm going to mention a couple of shows that I've been sampling.
And then I'll
The Girl from Plainview.
The Girl from Plainview is that's based on a true story.
Yes, it is.
And it has Asa Cash. I'm trying to remember.
It's the girl who
was in
texted her boyfriend to death, basically.
Right. She's very talented. She was in You're the Worst, if you've seen that show, which is a brilliant show. Very dark comedy. And I've heard only good things about the show, but some of us can't afford Hulu. So if you want to give me your password, just say it on air.
So I'm going to mention a couple of shows that fall into this category of, I guess you'd call them docudramas. So there's that one. There's The Offer, which is about The Godfather. I haven't seen that one because I don't get Paramount Network. There's one that I just started watching with Jessica today called The Staircase, about another murder case that I found out after we started watching it is true.
That was a huge Netflix docu-series. Like, that was really popular.
Right. And I'm going to go back and check out the docu. And that's why I wanted to bring this up. And there's a fourth one. The name is escaping me, but it's Winning Time. It's Winning Time is the fourth one, a docu based on a true story.
It would be the more perfect union if we didn't mention Winning Time.
But there's also Inventing Anna, which is all about the socialite who faked a past and lived on other people's money.
And so this is what I wanted to ask you guys. So I've been watching these series, and taking a true story and fictionalizing it is not new to entertainment. But there's something about these series that strikes me that people seem to be taking more liberties with the truth and with facts than I think used to happen in the past with fictionalized true stories. And beyond that, now someone can take me to task, and I'm sure maybe one of you guys know it off the top of your head, or if you spent enough time thinking about it, you'd come up with a movie and say, Kevin, what about this? That was clearly fictionalized. But what's happening with streaming series is, instead of watching a two-hour movie where they're playing with the facts and you can come away, okay, let's say JFK. I happen to think JFK was probably more accurate than a lot of other people do. But a lot of people say that Oliver Stone played with the facts and changed people's perceptions of what actually happened. But it was only a 2.5-hour movie. So you're only exposed to Oliver Stone's version of that story for 2.5 hours. With streaming series now, you're exposed and kind of immersed in the filmmaker's version of reality for 8, 10, 12 weeks. And each one is an hour. So you're talking about 8, 10, 12 hours. And what I think is happening is it changes how people consume this because, you know, the first 2 hours you could go, well, that was interesting, but I'm not sure that he was accurate with the facts. But when you're immersed in it over 12 weeks, 12 hours, you get brainwashed. And Joe, again, not to make this about Winning Time, because we've spoken about it ad nauseum, but don't you find that by the time you get to the 7th, 8th, 10th episode, you're starting to think that that's Kareem and that's magic and that's Jerry Buss. And it's hard not to look at it with that critical eye.
Just to keep it brief, like in the last episode of Winning Time, Jack McKinney hands over his notes to Paul Westhead about how he would play the game. When just the episode before, he basically told him that he wasn't shit and that he didn't deserve the spot that he had. And character-wise, that doesn't line up. Like, to me, logically, that doesn't line up. And that took me out of the story a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Greg, you had a point?
Yeah. So there was a little TV show in 1967. There was this TV show called The Fugitive. And in it, Dr. Richard Kimball comes in, sees a man killing his wife, and then derails a train somehow. The true life story was Dr. Richard Kimball got arrested, went to jail, got retried, and was released because they couldn't find someone else. They found evidence that it was someone else after spending like 7 or 8 years or 11 years in jail. There was no chase. There was no him running around the country finding anyone. Okay. It was this guy was sent to jail. Turns out he didn't do it. Let's make a movie. The point being, this is nothing new. Serpico was another one.
Right.
Serpico was based on a true story. Dog Day Afternoon, as long as we're going on that one.
Yep.
Although the movie is pretty accurate. The guy did try to do it to get a sex change for his girlfriend. If anyone remembers the details in that. I mean, we could just keep on doing Al Pacino movies at this point.
Yeah, but again, just to reiterate, my point being is when you are watching like that 2.5 hour movie, it's one experience. When you're immersed in somebody else's reality over a long extended period of time, then you're changing America's perceptions of something in a different way. That's my only point.
Oh, well, you know, it's sort of like watching, like, do you remember Tiger King? Or
that's his point. That's just it. It's that because of the fact that there's so much time spent with these people on this subject matter, that people's opinions are very, very much and passionately swayed.
Right.
More than if you went and saw JFK, a lot of people walked out of JFK and went, oh, my God, I can't believe all this happened.
Right.
But it didn't have the same impact that watching these things now, where you spend 8, 10, 12, 13, whatever hours, like Kevin said, with the subject, that you come away with it feeling like they wanted you to feel, whether it's true or not.
Well, I mean, as a viewer myself, if I'm watching one of these shows, whether it's a 2-hour movie or an 8-part or 10-part series, I know I'm watching entertainment and I'm not going to take what I'm watching. If I'm watching a documentary, that's something different. I want everything to be super accurate. Don't be messing around if you're calling it, you're making a documentary. But if you're doing something for entertainment, like if HBO's got, you know, I'm watching The Staircase right now. I do find it riveting for a lot of different reasons. Great acting, great cinematography, phenomenal cinematography. And as a filmmaker, I really appreciate that. But I'm watching it. And, you know, I think to myself, I wonder if that's really the way it went down. And then I'll do my own research just to see, oh, it didn't really go down. They had to speed up the timeline because that's what happens a lot. An 8-parter or a 10-parter show, like The Staircase is an 8-parter. And so I was kind of going, how are they going to drag this one out? But then I see what they're doing creatively and I'm like, oh, okay. And his the story is pretty amazing. And Colin Firth and Toni Collette are doing a great job. Parker Posey's in it. And she's always so much fun to watch. But to your point, as a viewer, you want to just, it's for entertainment. Then do your own research to see what liberties. I mean, of course, Oliver Stone took liberty. That's what he does all the time. I've worked with him and it's like, literally he'll do whatever the heck he wants. So that's Oliver Stone. But you know, I thought it was a pretty good film, but I was watching it going, this is not all accurate. I know that. That's my feeling.
So wait a second. So I had the big brag about Adam Scott, but here's someone that worked with Oliver Stone. So I think that you won the night.
I think you win.
You know, interviewing, marketing, that's a whole other story. I mean, it was, interesting. I don't really want to repeat that experience ever again, quite frankly. I think he's made some good movies, but he's not one of my favorite people to hang out with in a room.
Well, you are all my favorite people to hang out with, and I would continue to hang out with you, but then I'm just going to make Joe's editing job more difficult. So with that in mind, unless there's any thoughts that you guys really wanted to get out before we close this up for the night.
Kevin, I'd like to just do a little shout out for a show that I've been working on that's going to be airing on ABC on March 25th and then Hulu the next day. It's called The American Rescue Dog Show. And it is a 2-hour competition show of rescue dogs competing in categories like best belly rub and
My goodness, I watched this.
Best couch potato and a best underbite. So it's a really fun show. And I was honored to be one of the producers on it.
What network? May 25th, what network?
ABC. And then the next day it'll be on Hulu. So everyone please watch because it raises a lot of money for rescue animals, which is a passion of mine that I talked about on the last show last time I was with you guys.
Great. And Joe, you wanted to plug something as well.
My podcast, The Working Fans Podcast, is helping sponsor a wrestling show at Pistol Pete's Bar and Grill in Norwich, Connecticut.
Rescued wrestlers. Isn't that what it is?
They're wrestlers. I don't think they're rescued. It's just something we're a part of. We've helped put up flyers around town. We're hoping to get a crowd. But next to rescue dogs, that just feels ignorant.
Joe, I'm sure there are a lot of wrestlers who have adopted dogs and cats and all that. I would venture to say yes on that.
That's true. This isn't going to be on ABC or Hulu. It's going to be on independent wrestling TV if you want to watch the replay.
And with that, we want to say thank you for listening. Listen to our next podcast whenever it comes out. And Greg Matusak, what do you want to plug at the end of this sucker?
I'm going to see if I can get any listeners to send me their Hulu password so I can help help dogs and wrestlers and not abuse it for myself, of course. I'll take Paramount also. I'll take any password that any of our listeners want to send me.
Greg, let's take this offline. Okay, I might be able to help.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.